Welcome to the Mojo for Musicians podcast from Manny Cabo Media, where we dig deep into today's top strategies to help you take your music career to the next level with real, raw, and uplifting conversations with industry professionals that are making moves, making a difference, and making the best versions of themselves to inspire you to do the same. What's going on, everybody? I'm your host, Manny Cabo, and welcome to another episode of Mojo for Musicians. All right, welcome back, Mojo Maniacs, to another rocking episode of Mojo for Musicians, the musical source of inspiration. And as always, I got to thank my community of listeners and sponsors and all of you out there that make this show possible. So please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so I can keep inspiring our artists. And now I've got another incredible artist, composer, producer. And you guys might remember that one song, Crazy Frog, you know, by Axel F., which actually got all the way up to number one in the charts. I think it was back in 2005. And it's got over 350 million views, so it definitely got some serious love. It actually looks, right, I'm talking to my guys here. It looks like a modern Pixar animation, and it takes place underwater. So just go check it out, and trust me, it's really entertaining. And this particular comment, when I read it, I was laughing hysterically because it says, and I quote, "Jim often jokes that he is now making reparations for crimes against music." And even though that is pretty funny, Jim is no hack by any stretch of the imagination and a serious hustler who now runs LARP Music. And believe me, it's a no joke company because they create music compositions for some of my favorite companies. We're talking like BBC, Universal, Apple. So yeah, those are some pretty heavy hitters, but I think one of the biggest reasons why I have Jim on the show today is because many of you know out there that I've been a professional editorial music photographer close to, what now, 20 years. Damn, that hurts every time I say that. Visual branding is my jam. For me anyway, it's certainly at the apex of importance for any artist, but music branding is also just as important in selecting, you know, that crucial piece of underscoring music to best represent your campaign or story, as I've alluded to in several episodes in the past where we highlight the soundtrack of a movie, right? Or that perfect sync for a commercial, if you will. So let's bring on to the show the incredible talents of Jim Huswit to elaborate further on all this stuff. What's up, Jim? And welcome to Mojo for Musicians, man.
Hey, Manny, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Of course, my pleasure, brother. You know, and it's funny. I feel like I should have some specific Huswit intro music to underscore your entrance, man.
Oh, man, yeah, like what, like in WWF where I come running into the arena with some big
track. Let's get in, Jim! Right? Exactly. See, man, he follows me like popcorn to butter, man. So listen, thanks for being on the show. And I'm really excited to jump into this particular interview because evidently, man, you have cracked the code and have become a powerhouse in the areas that I truly revere and believe are the most intricate parts to the artist's growth, you know, which is great music and a strong visual campaign. And I completely agree with the fact that music does transcend language and culture. And for me, it's always been a universal language, you know, of unity and engagement, if anything. So yeah, respecting your time, let's dive right in, man, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
So as a singer and songwriter myself, you know, over the years, I've learned, especially living in Music City, you know, Nashville, the song is always going to be about the story. And the music, of course, showcases the story. So from your perspective, how can we creators stand out with our personal brands through our, you know, that power of storytelling?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think part of our personal story comes through in our creativity. So, you know, as a singer, whether that's you're a singer songwriter or you're writing instrumental music, it's like there's everybody has a unique creative voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that creative voice is a little part of the personality of the person that sort of shines through in everything they do. And it's, you know, some people sort of talk about, yeah, but you know, there's, you can't do anything truly original because everything's been done before.
Right.
But I think, you know, we're all, So I kind of have this conversation a lot with people, and there's this period between sort of ages of 10 and maybe 25, 30 are the kind of musically formative years of our life where everything we hear is informing what we do. Right. I trace my musical journey from, like, it started off as kind of like metal with Rage Against the Machine and Metallica, and then and somehow got into like Jamiroquai, and then got into 70s funk and soul. So all of those different influences have inspired me and inspired, you know, my creativity. But there's obviously the combination of those influences is always going to be different. And then what I draw from all of those unique influences is always going to be different as well. And so then I repackage that into something, you know, which is hopefully unique and I think tells my story, tells our story. But as well, I think it's always interesting as well, isn't it? It's like the story, people are always interested in story in terms of how it relates to them.
Right. I think they make the best stories, you know, the more transparent I think you are personally. Now, this isn't a blanket statement by any stretch, but I feel that my best songs come from my own direct experiences of things that I've endured. Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's different sides to the story, of course, and some people just write out of inspiration of other people's stories. But I think the most profound, the ones that really hit home, are the really personal ones, you know,
big time. And I think our ability to tap into that story. And it's funny, this interesting distinction, which I learned fairly recently, which is the idea of creating from the head versus creating from the heart.
Right.
And, you know, you can create intellectually, but actually the real power is when you create emotionally and you create from the heart.
100%. 100%.
Think about all the great songs that you've ever heard, those songs that move you to tears. There's a level of emotion in that, which is you can't sort of rationalize or just think about it. It's just, I always quote Adele, because Adele is just, she not only writes from the heart, but she performs from the heart as well. And that's why every album she ever does goes straight to kind of number one, is because she's just amazing at taking that emotion, packaging it and putting it out there. So if you can create from the heart, but then use, you know, intellectual side of things, which is, you know, mixing, the mastering, the production, all that sort of stuff, then I think that's where maybe something magical happens.
Well, I think you hit a nail on the head there, because not only did you say, I think it's honest, but I think you have to have the power and the knowledge of how to deliver that honesty. And I think that's the delineation between what separates the men and the boys and the women from the girls. And Adele, like, you're right, she's a great example, because she does. When you listen to her, you just lay into every word that she says, because she's believable. Yeah. And I've always said, and I've learned from some of the best producers, you know, and I've been privy to work with some of the best Grammy award winning producers in the market, who told me, listen, Manny, the one thing you want to master, this, you want to always deliver a good song, then you sing the song. Don't let the song sing you. Yeah. And that always hit home for me. But, you know, I just wrote a song about my dad, who I just lost to COVID. And I tell you what, I know most people who unfortunately lost someone during these trying times will certainly feel it. And Jim, I can't tell you how many times I had to stop singing in the booth. I couldn't, man. I was breaking down in tears. And I know, as painful as that sounds as I tell it, because it's still emotional and it will always be emotional, but people will be able to relate to that pain. And that in itself is the element. That's the secret sauce of a song. It's the chords that are being struck, full pun intended, of course, that that people can actually feel. And sure, it's sad, but hey, sadness makes for a great song.
Hey, well, I mean, look, what, 80% of songs written are about love. Why is that? Because love has the ability to grab us by the, engages our hearts in a way that a lot of other things don't do. Right. So it's anything that speaks to you and engages you emotionally. And I always think about this with music, is that's the business we're in. Mm. When you write a song, when you record a piece of music, it's all about engaging the listener emotionally.
Sure.
And that's, you know, you mentioned earlier about picking the right piece of music for a brand, for to support a TV ad or, you know, whatever it is. It's like, that's what the music is there for. It's to engage the audience emotionally, because if you can engage your audience emotionally, you have their attention and you've got them. Yeah. That's the key. So the more emotion you can put into that music, surely the more emotion the listener is going to feel.
I love it. I love it. Now let's move on to the next question. This is a great segue, because with the success of Crazy Frog, right? And sure, many people think it's quirky, right? I love it. You know, because like I said, I'm a big avid watcher of animations, and the soundtrack makes perfect sense. And it's so catchy, right? It's like, it's so Axl F. I mean, who can't remember the iconic doo, 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 doo. You know, it's timeless, right?
Yeah.
So Jim, let's draw the curtains here, right? Give me that behind the scenes process of what you did to get Crazy Frog to a number one hit song on the charts. And the second part of that question, the difference between working on your business and working for your business, so we can understand the process, especially for the artists listening in.
Yeah, sure. Well, Manny, I would love to tell you that there was some complex strategy which was drawn up over months and then successfully implemented meticulously over, you know, time.
Right, right.
But with the Crazy Frog, it was really a case of if you throw enough shit, some of it will stick.
Exactly.
It's that weird thing. Is like everybody wants to create a viral video, but right. If anybody knew how to create viral videos, they'd be doing it all the time.
Right.
Crazy Frog was this kind of weird phenomenon. And it tapped into something in that moment. And I still to this day could not tell you what that is, but it tapped into something. Tie in that repetition. So certainly in the UK, you couldn't turn on the TV without seeing the Crazy Frog during an ad break, usually twice. So there's the repetition. They were also spending so much money. I think this is, a lot of people don't, you know, there's always that story about the band that breaks through and it's like, oh yeah, they were like totally unheard of and they just literally broke through.
Sure, sure, sure.
That doesn't happen. It's like, there's always a record label pumping in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars into making any band. I once asked, I can't remember the name of the record label. I said, you know, what is the crux of running a record label? And he says, just piling up a load of money in the middle of the room and setting fire to it. Because you have to invest a lot of money in breaking an artist and certainly sort of getting, you know, number one or the equivalent.
Yeah.
So with the Crazy Frog, it was no exception. Like we were throwing the kind of money against TV advertising. So obviously you're getting this mass market coverage on television. And then obviously as soon as the track comes along, which is because the Crazy Frog existed on his own, just the guy going ring, ding, ding, ding.
Right, right.
Then you tie that in with the Harold Faltermeyer track from Beverly Hills Cop. And you've got this kind of cool recipe, and it's just, yeah, repetition, repetition, repetition. And
now, Jim, let me cut you there. I mean, would you mind disclosing, if you can, like, give me an idea, dollar amount, what you guys spend? The reason why I'm posing this question, because when I was on NBC's The Voice, right, they told us that if we were to literally delve into our own bank account to advertise for this performance that we're about to do 90 seconds, we would actually be spending $1.5 million estimated dollars on our marketing campaign. So am I in the ballpark there?
So honestly, I couldn't actually tell you how much we spent on that campaign. Mm. It was just money was just getting burnt. What I can tell you is that one TV ad at a specific time, it was like, it's not the Super Bowl. I can't remember what it was, like Saturday night, prime time. One TV ad was bought for £1 million, which would be sort of like 1,300 US.
Right, right.
And that was going on for months and months and months. So it would be in the millions. I've got no idea. But it's the kind of flywheel effect. It's like all of a sudden, you know, Crazy Frog's doing real well online, and then all of a sudden it's doing on TV. Then you've got the song on the radio and it just all feeds into it, and it kind of gets this crazy momentum where it just keeps flying. And I'm sorry.
No, man, listen, I'm glad you said that, because the whole point of why, and I've had this conversation ad nauseum with people, it's like you cannot create with just the end game being a financial gain. You got to do it because you love it, you know, and sure, whether it rains or shines in your pocket, it doesn't matter. Sure, if you're making the revenue and the ROIs are incredible, then fantastic, more power to you. But at the end of the day, let's face it, most videos don't go viral. Most songs don't go viral. Most people don't get a record label. So there's got to be this level of contentment that you have with just creating and enjoying the creative process. And that's why I wanted to ask you the second part of that question. Like, what's the difference, you know, working for your business, right? And working on your business, you know, because they're tightly niched right there. They're tightly linked together, I should say. But there's a certain degree of separation. And when can you tell there's that separation? When do you get to that point and make that decision?
Yeah, good question. So I think with us creatives, the tendency is the focus is on the creating, the purest, just sort of creating because we love creating. It's art at the end of the day.
Sure.
And so many people, myself included, sort of basically just want to do that all day. You know, if I could just make music all day, every single day, I would be.
Oh, are you kidding me? Of course. I'm right there with you, man.
And so many, like certainly the young composers and producers that I kind of see come out of college or university, they have this creative desire, but they there's the thing that's lacking is this sort of like the business acumen, the sort of knowledge. Because ultimately, as an artist, you know, you're essentially running a business.
Right.
The fans are your customers. The fans are your clients. And it's the same as a producer or a mix engineer. You're usually going to be freelance. So you've got to be able to run a business. You've got to be able to reach out and network and sort of build communities with people. You've got to be able to obviously be good at what you do. But I think the difference is, so taking, for example, me as a composer and a producer, when I'm making music, I'm working for my business. My business is the business of making, creating music, musical output. So me making music, that's me working for my business. Mm. But I have days where I'm working on my website, I'm working on my blog, I'm working on the podcast, I'm working on marketing, I'm doing some outreach, I'm going networking, whatever it might be. Mm. That's working on your business. And I think for a lot of creatives, it's the bit that they don't like. Certainly for me, it's the bit that I like the least out of everything. But without that, you know, you can make the best music in the world, but if nobody hears it, it is just a hobby. And I think, you know, most people would love to be able to kind of make some kind of money. And as you say, rightly say, Manny, it's not about the money. If you don't enjoy the process, then it doesn't matter how much money you're going to earn. It's like, you're not going to enjoy it. So
yeah.
It's like, what's the point?
You know.
So if you enjoy it, but it's, and as much as I dislike that side of the sort of, you know, a business, it's the least favorite part, is really, really important. And it's the difference between doing it as a sort of hobby and doing it professionally. So allocating time for the, I mean, if you can outsource it, great. I mean, I outsource quite a lot of that now. And I imagine you probably outsource a lot of that stuff on your business.
When I can,
as well.
Sure. If it's financially within my, you know, my budget, absolutely.
But when you're starting out, that's not always going to be feasible. But just sort of saying like, okay, every Monday is my day for sort of doing out. And you know, I can't underestimate the power of having a list and having a plan of like setting goals and like, okay, what do I need to achieve with my day to day? Because otherwise you just sort of like shooting blankly into the air.
Yeah,
just bearing that in mind is like when you're making music, when you're doing, you're writing songs, when you're, you know, that's working for your business, but make sure there's time allocated for working on it, because that's what enables you to transition from hobby to professional.
I appreciate you saying that, because I've had this conversation again with multiple artists. And so one of the things that I teach is, listen, I don't care how talented you are. There's a million talented musicians, more than millions out there, that you'll never hear, because they're under the impression that, oh, dude, I got the next hit song, right, Jim? I got the next hit song. Okay, then, you got the next hit song, so you think you have the next hit song. Let's say you do.
Yeah.
How are you going to market it? Who are you going to take it to? Who's going to produce it? Who's going to mix it for you? Where are you going to advertise? You know, what are the sources? Say, for example, social media. Do you have a budget allocated for that? If you do start to generate money, let's say your song does go well, you know how to file your own taxes. You know, these are the things that they really need to start taking into account. And unfortunately, they're under this spell, right? That, no, I don't need to do that. I'll just get somebody else to do that. Well, the point is, you have to get to that level of stability, which I've been doing this for a long time. I'm not even comfortable with the level of stability that you need to outsource this stuff, right? And I'm not the only one out there. So I'm glad, it's very refreshing to actually hear you say that. Because, you know, it's funny, the revolving narrative is the people that are in it, right? The people that are successful, I like to think I'm successful, I know you're successful, they're the ones that are that advocate that. You just need to understand the business side of it. You have to develop a business acumen side, or else you're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. It's funny, because a question I get asked quite a lot is, when did you know that you'd made it? I'm like, I haven't made it. I'll never make it. I don't know where the next project's coming from. It's not like there's a queue outside my door of people. You've got to be out there doing it. And I think the thing is as well, is when you're ambitious and driven, it's like every time you reach a milestone or reach a goal, you kind of move on to the next one. I'm really bad at it. I need to sort of check myself all the time and go, okay, cool, this was a big win. Take a minute to appreciate it. How does it feel?
Right.
And rather than just moving on, because I just sort of like, right, yep, next, out the way, on to the next one. So that idea, the notion of making it, doesn't really exist, because you're constantly be good at pushing forward and constantly,
well, you're only as big as your last hit, you know, you're only as great as your last performance. So I completely agree.
Hey, so this is a really interesting one as well. So I think that's, it, I, I've reframed that the other day. You're only as good as your next track.
Touche. I like it. I like it.
Because that, by that definition, it's like, okay, because this is me through and through. And this is, I think, something that shaped a lot of the decisions that I've made is that I want every piece of music that I write, the next piece of music has to be an improvement or development or growth on what's come before.
Sure, sure.
If not, I'm sitting still and I'm stagnating. So you are only as good as the last piece, but I'm looking to the next one, which I think you probably are as well.
We're cut from the same cloth on there. I mean, I want every song to sound better than the last. And sometimes it's hard to do. Let's be realistic here. But you know what? It's fun trying though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And being prolific as well, I think that's a really key part of it. It's like, sure. I think sometimes we can get so hung up on creating the perfect song. It's like, I think Beethoven wrote over 800 pieces of music and we probably know about 20 of them. Yeah. 30, I couldn't name any of them, to be honest, but you know, he has 20 that are well known, but he wrote 800. So you've got to go through the process, because every time you write something, every time you do something, there's a learning curve. There's something to be taken from it, and you just start to build and build and build.
Absolutely, man. So listen now. I've worked for Apple for close to 10 years, right? Love them. They make robust products, extremely intuitive. I watch BBC programs all the time because I'm a huge fan of English crime dramas, right? And also a lover of classical universal horror pictures. And we're talking dating back to like the early days of Lon Chaney. And not to mention, my first record deal was with Universal. So my obvious question to you is, how did you land the work with these world class brands? And of course, by no stretch am I taking away your talent. You certainly have it and certainly have displayed it in your accolades. But in my experiences, I know it takes a lot more than just talent, as we just alluded to. So share that process, man.
So I'll talk about the Universal gig, because I think that's a classic example of where my proactivity really paid off. I'd sort of made this transition from singer-songwriter into production, because ultimately for me, it was never about getting on stage and performing. I did it for years, but that was never what I was in it for. I wanted to be in the engine room behind closed doors, producing, writing, mixing. So I'd sort of got into production music, and I had a relationship with an agent who was sending me briefs for, it was EMI. KPM, which is now Sony. They've changed hands that many times.
Yeah.
And I stopped working with them just because I didn't like the relationship. It wasn't working for me. And in doing that, obviously my briefs, they dried up, music briefs, that is. So it was a question of, okay, well, what do? I can either sit here hoping that something magical falls out of the sky, which I think is all too easy to do.
Right. Right.
Or I can actually sort of go out there and sort of be really proactive. So I identified Universal as a company that I wanted to work with. I loved their catalog. I'd seen an interview with someone and I thought, yeah, this person, I'm kind of on the same page as them. They have a real appreciation for music like mine. So I'd identified Universal. I went and listened to their catalog. So this is their sort of production music catalog. And I found a gap. I found a gap in their catalog, something, music that they didn't have that I really wanted to do. And it was basically filmic folk. The idea of taking sort of traditional folk instrumentation, like, you know, guitars, pianos, etc., and creating, but then writing sort of big string, sort of panoramic string arrangements for them. So I wrote 7 tracks. I picked the best 3. And then I went out there and funded some musicians, because I kind of wanted to invest in making it the best it could possibly be. And a project I just worked on for theatre, I managed to assemble this super group of musicians in the studio. And man, when you get in a studio with amazing musicians, there's a magic.
Yeah, right.
There's a magic that you cannot recreate on your own programming shit on a piano or on a MIDI keyboard. And so I was like, I have to get real instruments in this, because it's the difference. That's the difference between, you know, I just call it broadcast versus release quality.
Right.
Release quality music sounds amazing because it's amazing musicians making incredible music. And, you know, I play several instruments, but I'm never going to be as good as a session bass player or session drummer, etc. So anyway, got into the studio, got real cellos. I mean, I didn't have an orchestra, so I was multi-tracking, you know, getting the cellist to play the same things.
Sure, of course, I get it, yeah.
Playing that, same with the strings, real drums, and I sort of produced up these 3 tracks to the best they could possibly be. But I wanted them to sound like commercial releases. I didn't want it to sound like production music in inverted commas, as in like, you know, quickly done on a computer. And I pitched it to Universal. Luckily, I knew a guy, and I think this speaks to kind of the importance of relationships.
Yeah, networking, 100%.
Yeah. But I'd met this guy at like a, you know, a panel show, and we chatted. I mean, not with a view to sort of working together, just sort of chatting to him. And then I randomly bumped into him at the bus stop again a few days later. It turns out he lives quite near to my studio. And I sort of said to him, I said, hey, look, I've got this album of music, which I think would be really good for your catalog. It's not on your catalog. You don't have anything like it. Would you have a listen? And he said, yeah. So I sent it to him. Next thing I know, they're signing the tracks. They did really well over a couple of months. And then they sort of brought me in to do another album. And that was it. That was how I kind of got in with Universal. And I think for me, one of the big things there, and I talk about this all the time, is when you approach someone, go with an offer rather than an ask. So rather than me going to him and going, oh, can I make some music for you, please? I went to him and said, here's something that I think will be really good for your catalog.
Brilliant.
So I had an offer rather than an ask. And I think that's all too often I get emails, and I'm sure you do as well, man. It's like, hey, man, can you just listen to this and tell me blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
sure.
If you're asking someone to do something for you, that's not a powerful position to be in. Go to them with and solve a problem for them. Go to them with something that they need or they want, because that's an interesting proposition.
Well, no, I have to agree with you, because that's how I got you on the show. You know, I'm always looking for intriguing guests, and I had no idea at the time who you were. I was presented with an option to be like, listen, I have two artists. One guy does this, one guy does that. And I read your resume, and I'm like, wow, this guy would be perfect for the show. So A, you have a really cool circle of people that trust in you, that believe in you and what you're doing, which led it to me. And I think I've established myself as a pretty cool podcast that's based on informing and educating my populace of musicians. So it does, it works hand in hand. You have to be good at what you do. You have to be likable. You have to have a robust network of people that you can rely to, because when you start plugging away, right? And it's all about doing the reps. We just had a huge conversation the other day in this room. It's all about doing the reps. Just like you said, you throw enough shit on the wall, something's going to stick, but you have to have some good stuff, right?
Yeah. You've got to fail over and over again.
Yes, absolutely. That's definitely the missing ingredient there. And so many people like to tread lightly around that. I'm like, no, the more you fail, the more success is going to come your way, because at least now you know how not to do something, right? Yeah. So yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, man. Some great points. And unless you want to add something else, I'll get to my final question.
Oh, where to begin? I don't think anything.
No, you did, man. You added so much value. And I think the moral of that story and the thing that I took away most of it is you filled a void. You filled a gap that they did not have. And that's just business 101. In order for you to have a successful business, you have to have something that people want, that they do not have, that can be life-changing. And you did that. You provided a piece of music that they're like, oh my God, we have nothing like this in our catalog. And coming from a company that has a slew, an array, a myriad, pick an adjective, of music at their disposal, for them to say that, you know you touched a nerve. And that's essentially what you have to do. So this one's going to be an easy. This is my signature question of the show, which is, what's your mojo? Like, what gets you out of bed? And I know the answer, because you've basically elaborated on it with these, you know, three questions that I've asked you. But everyone has something within them that says, no, I don't care how bad it gets, I'm going to keep doing this. So what's your mojo?
So I think for me, like, what these like three of the most important values in my life are: one, freedom; two, creativity; and joy. It's like, you know, I think this is why I kind of quit everything. You know, I left the marketing world of marketing Crazy Frogs, I pursue music because I'm a purist, and I'm sort of like, if I'm going to spend a third of my life working, I want to do something that makes me feel energized and alive and I get off on. So it's that creativity, it's the freedom. I'm freelance, so I can, you know, I don't have to ask anyone if I can go to the toilet or go on holiday or whatever. I can do whatever I want all the time. I mean, the downside of that is that, you know, when I do go on holiday, I'm not getting paid. And you know, you've got to be constantly looking for the next gig. I think for me, it's just all about kind of an exploration of my imagination. You know, how I just get lost in this flow state. And this, you know, flow state is just the idea is when you, you just stop thinking. You just get lost in this process, in this beautiful, magical process. And for me, that's making music, and that's my happy place. That's where I get to explore my imagination. It's what brings me joy. And I know that if I can kind of create every day, even if it's like, you know, just for now. And even, recently I've started doing oil pastels as a random sort of like intuitive art as part of a course I was doing. And that's really cool as well. So even if I don't get a chance to do some music, if I just sort of spend half an hour, and I set a time limit as well. And actually what I've started doing is applying that to music. So I'm going to an hour every morning, I just sit down for an hour and write a piece of music. It might be complete crap and I throw it away, or it might be great and I keep it and it becomes an idea for a new piece or whatever. But yeah, I think the special sauce is just that freedom, that creativity, and it's got to be bring me joy. If it doesn't bring me joy, then what's the point?
Well, listen, you get no arguments from me on that level. Absolutely. And you know what? We all need an outlet. You're doing these paintings.
Yeah.
I do my photography. You know, sometimes I do my meditation. So I think it's a must have, you know, people call them distractions. Yeah. I call them must haves because you cannot, I don't care how much you love something. If you're fully immersed 24 hours a day, you're going to burn yourself out. You know, your brain needs time to replenish itself. And I think you're doing it right, my man. And listen, anything else you'd like to plug? Some new music, some new productions, anything else that you're working on right now that you'd like to do?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a load of music coming out with them. I do a lot of work with AudioSocket ASX, which are stateside. They're based, actually kind of technically Seattle, but they're big in, they sort of work in LA. So a lot of stuff that I'm doing at the moment is trailer music for trailers. I'm just waiting to hear on a trailer for Disney. Fingers crossed that that's going to come off. But I can't say anything just yet because it might not. You never know. It's like literally one of those things.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm going to stop you right there. Let's put out some good energy that you get it.
It's in the ether, and hopefully it'll come.
There you go.
But the other thing is just like it's my podcast, Sync Music Matters. So like for anybody who's interested in, basically, the idea of the show of Sync Music Matters is to understand the people and the process behind the most incredible music in TV, film, and games. So I'm chatting to composers and producers, but I'm also talking to editors, music supervisors, you know, the people that are responsible for getting that killer music on TV, because I'm always fascinated by their process and what makes them great at what they do. So if that sounds like something interesting, then check that out.
I love it. There you go, people. Hey, if Jim sounds like somebody you want to work with or collaborate, reach out to him. The key is where they can find me
at larpmusic.com. So that's larpmusic.com. I am kind of on social, but I'm not. I exist on social media, but I find it very difficult.
Now, wait a second. Now, you know how vital marketing is.
But it's one of those things that takes so much time. So I do it reluctantly, but I'm at Jim Hustle on Instagram. I'm at LARP Music on Facebook and LinkedIn, Jim Hustle. But LARPmusic.com, that's where everything's centralized. So head over there and check that out.
I love it, man. Well, anyone who wants to come up with the next number one hit song and work with Jim, please feel free to reach out. Jim, thank you so much for your time, brother. It was an honor having you. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, your journeys with Mojo for Musicians, my man. I wish you the best, much abundance, and much good fortune. Hopefully,
yeah, cheers, man. Awesome, man. Thank you so much, and you know, props to you for everything you're doing and the inspiration that you're bringing to the world of creativity.
Well, thank you, my man. Hey, we go hand in hand. I'll talk to you real soon. We got to do it again.
Take care, man. Bye.
This has been a Mojo for Musicians podcast. If you're a musician, producer, engineer, or any other industry professional wanting to share your mojo and stories of success with our listeners, or just want to share some feedback on today's episode, we'd love to hear from you. So just send us an email at info@mannycabo.com. Thanks for listening.